We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
Good morning and welcome to the second hour of Focus. My name is David Inge and glad to have you with us. The producers for our program, Harriet Williamson, Martha Deal, Jason Croft, is at the controls this morning. In this hour of the program, we'll be hearing about how a fellow from Peoria ended up starting a nonprofit group that's aimed at eliminating poverty in Africa. Our guest is Ben Haefele, and we'll talk a little bit more about his story, but in short, he spent time in Guinea as a volunteer in the Peace Corps and says when he was there, he saw a lot of poverty and a lot of needless death, and he decided that he wanted to get involved in developing development work. After he came out of the Peace Corps, he went to the London School of Economics. We'll talk a little bit about his experience there, but eventually he started a group called HOTE. This is something that's actually works in Africa but is based in Peoria. And it's an organization that's dedicated to helping people, small business owners, by providing them with education and training, help them develop their businesses, and in the process, create jobs. He is here visiting in Champaign, Urbana. He will be giving a speech today at the Friday Forum. This is a series of talks that happen on Friday at noon at the University Y. And this spring, the overall theme for the series is social entrepreneurship as a force for change. He'll be speaking today at noon at the University YMCA on South Wright in Champaign. These programs are always free and open to the public, and anybody who's interested can feel welcome to stop by. There are a number of sponsors, and just one time I want to run down the list, so I want to name everybody, including the University YMCA, also the Center for Advanced Study, the Episcopal Church and Foundation, the First Mennonite Church, the McKinley Presbyterian Church and Foundation, and the Wesley Church and Foundation. And again, people who are interested should feel free to stop by at noon and hear on the program. People who would like to call in and ask questions can do that as well. 333-9455, that's the number here in Champaign-Urbana. Toll free, 800-222-9455, and email will-talk@illinois.edu. Well, thanks very much for being here.
Well, thanks for having me.
I think it, when we saw that you were coming, I thought, well, this would be an interesting opportunity to talk about one approach to the idea of doing development that is, well, a little bit different, I think, than what we've done in the past. And that's not to say that big-scale efforts aren't important and sometimes needed. Mm-hmm. But this is a different sort of approach that really seems to be much more of a grassroots kind of thing. Generally speaking, what is HOTE all about?
Well, HOTE, as you said, is about taking a little bit of a different approach in creating economic development and growth. As a Peace Corps volunteer, as you said before, I spent 2 years in West Africa in Guinea, and lived in a very small town. Saw a lot of needless sickness, disease, a lot of needless death, and a lot of the programs that were being put in place by governments, aid organizations, that kind of thing, didn't really do the trick. We'd get a new road, we'd get a new health center, we'd get things, but it didn't really seem to me that it was attacking the root cause of poverty. And that's what we believe HOTE is doing, is attacking the root cause of poverty. Mm-hmm. And it took me a number of years to really figure out what it was that I thought was at the root cause of poverty, and that's what HOTE does now.
Yeah, and just, again, very basically, what you do is you work with people who have existing businesses, so small business people, try to help to teach them things like accounting and marketing and, really basic kinds of business planning, mm-hmm. The idea being that they can then grow their business, make it stronger, and ultimately then employ people, because I'm sure it's the case there, as is the case here, small business, that's where jobs are created.
Absolutely, absolutely. And just to build on what you just said, our clients, the people that we serve in West Africa, already have businesses. They're already entrepreneurs. We feel that mm-hmm. entrepreneur is a character trait. We don't go and ask people on the street if they want to start a business. So you're absolutely right. We take people that already have businesses, and they're already doing marketing. They're already doing accounting. They're already doing financial planning. But what we're doing is we're strengthening their strengths. And a lot of these people, while very intelligent, they speak two or three different languages. They're employing anywhere from 2 to 25 employees when we come into the picture. They've never had the opportunity for formal education in business. And that's what we provide. So they're already doing marketing and all that kind of stuff. But we come in and we say, hey, here's kind of a standard way of doing things, and people absolutely love it. We have to exclude people from our training every time we do it because we just don't have the capacity.
And you've been now doing this since 2007?
Yes, that's right? Correct. In 2007, we started our programs, and so far we have trained 131 clients in Guinea, West Africa. The first class that we trained was 17 people, and we did some follow-up with them about 7 months after they'd completed their training. And on average, 1.6 jobs were created for every entrepreneur that we trained. Now, if you extrapolate that to the 131, that means we've created over 200 jobs in West Africa. Again, that's an estimate, and we need to go back and make sure we've got our data, collect our data in a timely fashion. But we are having an impact. Our clients in Africa, like I said, are very excited about what we're doing, and there's a lot of demand for our services over there. Yeah. And we have expansionary plans as well to other countries. So
what's the operating budget for HOT? How much money are you spending on this?
Right. Well, I guess since 2007, it was our test phase. It was kind of like a market test. So what we did is we spent about $20,000 each year to have a program manager and trainers in West Africa to train the 131 people. That's a pretty good return on investment right there. But we wanted to find out if it worked because it's no use putting all this stuff in place, coming up with a $1 million budget, and then finding out that what we're doing doesn't really do the trick. And we've got excellent qualitative and quantitative data now that says that it is working. People like what we're doing. And our original intent was to start ramping up in 2009. Well, that was a pretty bad year for nonprofits. So we've chosen this year to go ahead and start executing that growth plan.
Yeah. I wanted to go back a couple of steps because I'm sure that people would be interested in hearing a little bit about your story and how it is that you got into this. And it's my understanding that you were here in school. You went to the University of Illinois, studied statistics.
Statistics. I didn't tell my wife that until after we were married.
And that when you finished, you decided to go into the Peace Corps. What was behind that decision?
Well, I could either do, graduate school in statistics economics, or I could get a job in the corporate world. And I'd always wanted to study abroad, and I decided that at that time it was really my one shot to go out and kind of see the world a little bit. And ultimately I knew I'd end up back in the business world because that's another passion of mine, but I wanted to go out and see what was out there. And so West Africa was my first stop, and I realized I really liked being international. So then I was in London and China and back in London working all over Europe, and I've also done some traveling and working in India now. So it was me exploring who I was and saying, look, I want to do this. I'm going to go for it.
I wouldn't think that there would be all that much call for statisticians in West Africa. When you were there, what sort of things did you actually do?
Yeah. Well, I was a math teacher at the 8th, 9th, and 10th grade levels. So teaching, introductory algebra, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. In it was a building that was the size of a carport almost, a three-stall garage. But it was a government school. I was basically, the way I tell people, I was a substitute teacher for 2 years. I was teaching along Ghanaian staff, and my boss was Ghanaian, and they had a lack of teachers, so I filled that gap for 2 years.
Yeah. So then when you finished that, did you have this sense that at that point what you wanted to do was somehow get involved in international development work?
Yeah. I fell in love with Africa. And I don't know what it is about Africa, but I am absolutely in love with Africa. I love everything about it. I love the people. I love the culture, and I'm very intrigued by its problems. And I decided that I was going to go into economic development while I was in the Peace Corps. So the reason I went to London after West Africa is that I'd been admitted to the London School of Economics, and my intent was to study economic development and go back and solve all the problems in West Africa. And upon my arrival and the first 2 weeks of class, I was horrified by the economic development class at the London School of Economics, as it was, more about fancy Bellman equations and formulae and Greek symbols and proving how smart you are rather than actually addressing what I felt were the real issues on the ground. And so I abandoned that. I didn't abandon my studies. I stayed there, but I switched over to a different field of study.
So you did eventually graduate?
Yes, absolutely. And then I went into consulting and went around and did consulting all around Europe and in Eastern Europe, and saw the impact that growing businesses were having in Eastern Europe on those economies that were dynamic and growing fairly quickly at that time. And I thought, hey, let's put two and two together here. There is a deep connection between business and development, and in fact, business is development, in my opinion. So when you think about what a business is, it does two things. It provides somebody with something they want, and it provides other people with income. So I would challenge you to look around the room that we're in right now and identify anything that wasn't made by a business other than ourselves. All these tools that we have in front of us, they're tools for living, were created by a business. And I think that's what causes economic development. And the reason that we can buy all these things and use them is because we have an income. So business, empowering business owners, small and medium-sized business owners in West Africa is really what I think is going to eliminate poverty long-term. And that's what I feel is the root cause of poverty, is that lack of formal business education and business acumen, critical mass of business acumen that's necessary to sustain an economy.
Our guest in this hour of Focus is Ben Haefele. He is the founder of something called HOTE. This is a group that's really, they're based in Peoria, but they do their work in Africa, in West Africa, in Guinea, a place where he spent 2 years in the Peace Corps. And as he's explained, the approach here is to take people who already have small businesses, people who are entrepreneurs, and to try to provide them with some basic training and knowledge so that they can do even better in their business, help that business to grow. And then the idea is that not only does that provide goods and services, and it also provides jobs. And they're still kind of in the takeoff phase here. They've been in existence since 2007 have seemed to have demonstrated that it actually can work. We'll talk some more. He's here, by the way, to be a part of the Friday Forum. It's a series of noontime talks that happen at the University YMCA. And this spring, the overall theme for their series is social entrepreneurship as a force for change. They're all free and open to the public. He'll be talking today at noon at the University Y. That's on South Wright Street in Champaign, down in the heart of the campus. And anyone who is interested in attending should feel welcome. The programs are always free and open to the public. Here, questions are welcome too, 333-9455 and toll free, 800-222-9455. Well, I'd like to have you talk a little bit more about how it is that you actually made the jump from the idea, the concept, to actually doing it. And were you living in Peoria at the time?
At the time, I was living in London. Oh, yeah. And then I started it and ended up moving to Peoria during the startup phase. So I guess through the Peace Corps, I developed a network of professionals, both African and expat in Africa, and was in constant contact with them because that's my passion. And so through them, we devised a business model and a system of checks and balances that would enable us to run something like this from Peoria and still be effective and do measurement and follow-up in West Africa. So right now, we have a program manager and an office in West Africa that's based in Conakry, which is the capital of Guinea. And then from that office, our program manager administrates the training and that kind of thing. And then I have other people that do what I'll call audit, where I will contact them periodically and have people check up on each other and that kind of thing. So to make sure that everything's going smoothly. And we did until recently use the Peace Corps volunteers in the area. They would stop by and visit the trainings and just kind of, report back to us and make sure that everything was going smoothly. So Yeah, that's the nutshell of the business model. Yeah.
And maybe I should just mention the reason that you're in Peoria is that you grew up in the Peoria area, so that's your home.
I did grow up in the Peoria area, and then traveled the world for many years after University of Illinois. And actually, just in a couple of days, February 23rd, I was passing through Peoria, and I met this girl. And I'm now married to her, and she's from Peoria. I'm from Peoria, so we're living in Peoria.
Okay. Hey, we have a caller. Let's talk with them. Champaign County here, line number one. Hello.
Hi. I'm all for alternative development models, but there is a big but here, which is that if one doesn't also have a complementary sort of macroeconomic view of what's going on, and it's really shocking when you look at the figures about how much more capital is extracted from Africa than actually goes in any kind of category of development aid. Just to take a small archetype, which isn't Africa, which are a small example, Haiti was paying its service on its debt at a rate of $1 million a week. They had something like a $500 million yearly payout, and at a time when nothing was going on, pre the earthquake, and also the development policy that was being imposed there was this light export and subsidized rice, mainly from Arkansas Delta, is being subsidized here and dumped on, and it's just completely decimated the small economy in the countryside. So, without looking at these broader, call them radical, call them left, points of view or macroeconomic, it just seems that it's well and good to be helping people, and I applaud that. But in the way you are, but if one doesn't see this broader story, I think. And I haven't heard you allude to it at all, so I'd like for you to react to it. I don't know if you'll be sympathetic in any way or not, but
no, absolutely. And I love answering questions. So, and that's a very good one. I'd say the effect of the macro on our clients in West Africa. Our clients, as I said before, are small business owners, small to medium sized business owners that have anywhere from 2 to 25 employees. When we get involved with them. They're from a variety of industries. Some of them are so small that they do not yet pay taxes. Some of them are just starting to pay taxes to the government. They're more part of the formal economy. And so really the only impact that macro view has on the people that we serve is through the taxes that they pay. Otherwise, all the...
If I might colloquy with you a little, because I don't find that at all. I mean, if commodity prices are set in such a way that small farmers can't survive, your small businessmen can't afford to buy things from these people. So, I mean, it's pretty clear that this depressive effect on the economy that I'm pointing at would clearly have an impact on small business.
Okay, I see your point then in terms of inputs to their business processes and things like that. I guess we're kind of a gunboat organization. We're quick and nimble. We don't have a lot of advocacy or policy focus. So I think the things that we're doing is we're helping the people that we do help that do farming or certain people that do textiles, that kind of thing. We're just basically helping them to do what they do better. And I guess we can only do we can only have an effect on a certain number of things. There's only certain dials that we can turn as an organization, and we try to focus on those as much as possible, and leave the other questions to other organizations. And there's also just to add on that, there's a lot of other very essential programs out there that need to happen. A lot of relief efforts, for example, and sometimes when people listen to what Hote's doing, they say, "Oh, so you don't think we should be feeding people who are hungry or providing medicines or something like that?" And that's not the case at all. I think there's a lot of other good programs out there, but our controllables are helping our clients build their business acumen and create jobs in the process.
I'm sorry, I'm still reacting to the idea that you suggested this had something to do with gunboats, and I'm sure it was just a turn of phrase, but it was a curious one. And I think, again, there are many organizations. They don't get a lot of discourse here. People don't even know what neoliberalism means in the U.S. International Forum for Globalization is a good place for people to start on the web, and it's just ifg.org. Thanks a lot.
Other questions are certainly welcome here. We're getting close to our midpoint of this hour of focus. Once again, our guest is Ben Haefele. He is the founder of an organization called HOTE. It's based in Peoria, where he lives and where he grew up, but they do their work in West Africa on a small scale now, but they're something that they're trying to develop. It started in 2007. They're working in Guinea in West Africa, where he was in the Peace Corps, and they provide basic sort of business training in basic training in business principles to small business people. The idea is that then they can develop their businesses, they can grow them, and they can employ more people. And they've now trained a little over 130 people, and it's their estimate that those folks have indeed created jobs, that each person created, I think what the figure, I don't recall what you said, the figure that I read was that you're guessing, you're estimating that each of the entrepreneurs you trained has created an average of 1.6
yeah.
jobs.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a substantial job creation for what sounds to me like a pretty small amount of money.
Yes.
That you have spent.
Yes. And the thing is that all of those have been focused on program costs in West Africa.
Mm-hmm.
Just a little over 200 jobs, estimating just over 200 mm-hmm. jobs.
And all this is supported by private donations?
Yeah, it's a mix of individuals, grants, and businesses as well. I'd say most of it is through individual contacts at those organizations. So obviously we can't expand our scope with $20,000 a year moving forward. Now that we've gone through the litmus test, we've got some evidence that what we're doing works. We are crafting a pretty ambitious marketing strategy, and we'll be going after some of the bigger grant money as well as more of a grassroots campaign across the United States as well.
Mm-hmm. So what sort of relations do you have with the government of Guinea?
We've had to register ourselves with the government of Guinea. We are now a registered NGO, a non-governmental organization in Guinea. And we pay about through the salary that we pay our program manager, we pay the government about $28 a month in taxes.
$2,800.
$28 a month.
$28.
$28. Yes.
In taxes, and how many people do you directly employ? That is the people who are doing your
yeah.
training.
Well, we directly employ one, and then we have a external training supplier that we've been using for the past mm-hmm. 2 years, who are just absolutely amazing, and I've met with them on several occasions. Very very smart people that have been doing training like this in the area, that speak the local language, that really get the business issues on the ground in that part of the world. So we're very fortunate to partner with them.
Mm-hmm. Tell me about some of the people who have gone through the training.
Okay. The mix that we get is fascinating. We've had internet cafes in some of the bigger towns. We have had pig farmers, hair braiders, metal workers. Really, really a broad mix of people that are just entrepreneurs to the core and are really jumping in the windows to get into our training. I could pick – you want me to pick one and go through
– Yeah, maybe that would be okay. Good. Just say take one person.
Okay. Well, I guess one of our celebrity clients is Maria Camano. And this is a truly fascinating woman. Was an entrepreneur before she knew she was one. She started an embroidery goods business in Konkan, which is in the upper region of Guinea. And when we started working with her, she had 18 employees, all young women, who did a lot of sewing and embroidery work for clothing that was then sold in the local area. And Maria, before she started this business, she worked at a church and actually sold fruit to raise capital to start her business. And selling fruit is not a high-margin business because there are mango trees everywhere. And really the value that you're adding in that business is picking the fruit and putting it on a plate and selling it. So she worked very hard and started her business. And like I said, when we caught up with her, she had 18 employees. After our training, she made a lot of improvements to accounting and capital budgeting, that kind of thing, controlling costs. And now she has 28 employees and has expanded her revenue and her profit. And so that's a kind of a classic example of how HOAT works. Yeah. But Maria had not had a chance to think about business formally in an education classroom setting, and really network with people who are business owners in the local area around these issues. And incredibly intelligent woman. She speaks two different languages, which are completely different from each other. And she was already so intelligent that she was capable of running this business from scratch in West Africa. And so, HOAT is strengthening her strengths rather than starting from scratch. She and all the other people that we've served are very grateful for the services that we provide. And really, our end clients, you might think of them not so much as Maria, but those 10 new employees that she has now, those are newly employed people. And they're all, in this case, it happens to be young women, several of which are young mothers. And those are young women that did not have jobs before this opportunity.
Yeah. I think this is, I guess what I find myself wondering, if you have somebody like that who had an existing business and clearly had business acumen because she was successful and she was employing people, what learned from having been through the training that you're doing that she really didn't know before?
No, that's a great question. And, it's different for each entrepreneur. And we've solicited some feedback from our entrepreneurs. Our biggest hit is accounting. A lot of people don't have a formal accounting system. And so they know that they're kind of making money, but they don't know how much they're spending on each input. They don't know how much they're spending on, they're not sure about pricing. Are they getting that right? And so the accounting module that we teach has been our most successful one. And now they know how much they're making. And then they can set goals as well. If you the famous phrase is what gets measured is what gets done. Well, now they can say, okay, here was our revenue, cost, and hence profit for last year. What do we want to do next year?
We have another caller here in Morris, so we'll talk with them. Line number 4. Hello.
Hello, David. It's me again.
Hi.
Hey, listen, I, for years, had worked for the Forest Service. That was going to be my primary career. Unfortunately, it didn't work out, and I got transferred out here. But anyway, long story short, I used to work for YACC. I used to train a lot of these young adult Conservation Corps people. And a lot of it had to do with two things. One was not only trail building and campground building. The other one was kind of donating their time volunteer-wise on how to work on how to help set up certain infrastructures, help people work on a house, kind of like what Habitat for Humanity is. What I would kind of like to see, we don't have enough of, I think, is training, skilled training for the laborers, like for the building trades. Right now, I know there's lack of with the situation with the economy, but I have been doing this. I've been just on my own, and unfortunately, I've been hit with a bunch of people want me to do this. Unfortunately, I don't have the money. It would be to train them how to use a saw properly, how to use a screw. A screw gun, a drill, and show them how a house goes up, and try to build small projects to help the community out volunteer wise. I can't do it by myself anymore. It's just too expensive. Do you guys do that? Do you help start people out in a career like in contracting as far as building infrastructure, concrete work, or masonry type work, or just painting, typical small stuff. I'll get off and listen. Thank you.
No, and that's a fantastic question. We do not right now. We focused on those core kind of business skills that an entrepreneur would need. That is something that has been requested of us through the feedback that we've had from our 131 clients. There's a lot of requests for industry-specific training. So, you know, for people in the construction industry, for example, of which we've trained a few, you know, they want exactly what you've just described. And that's not really within our domain right now. We've done a little bit of work in looking at partners that might be able to provide that kind of training, but it's not something that we're currently focusing on. And I think that in the coming years, as the organization grows, I think we'll be forced, due to our clients' demands, to move more into that sphere.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and you've talked about the fact that it was your idea just to start out with that you would take people who had existing businesses.
Yes.
And there are programs that I think that do something. They take an even a step back from that, places around the world where there are people who say, I want to have a business.
Yes.
And one of the critical things that they need and that some programs provide them is a little bit of money.
Yes.
So that gets us into this idea that we've been hearing about of microfinance that we've been hearing about more and more, I think, in recent years, that is there's somebody who would like to start a business and they don't need maybe they just need a couple of $100s. Not a lot to us, but of course to them, that's a lot of money, and that they don't have places they can't go down to their local bank and say, I want to start a business. Can you lend me $200? They won't do it. But there are programs that aim at getting that kind of thing. And I wonder if you had thought about the possibility of branching out, and maybe if you had somebody who wanted to start a business and you thought they had what it would take, that you could work with somebody like that.
Okay. Well, I mean, there's two pieces to that question. One is, would we start working with businesses that have not yet, you know, started startups, that kind of thing? And the answer on that is no, at least in the short to medium term. We're going to keep focusing on people that have existing businesses and strengthening their strengths. I think that the other question, though, is what about microfinance? Because that's something a lot of people are familiar with now. And several of our clients have financing through partners that are not HOAT. So there are four or five kind of main microfinance institutions in Guinea, and many of our clients are – well, several of our clients, rather, are getting financing from them. That is also frequently requested of us. Can we provide financing? Again, we wanted to go through, do the litmus test, make sure that the training model worked because that's our core. And in our business plan, and I personally dislike talking about what we're going to do. I much rather prefer to talk about what we have done and the results. But what we plan to do gets into not microfinance, but small to medium-sized enterprise finance as well. And also a new concept, which is micro-consulting. And that is, it's all well and good to train someone, but then, we'd like to have 3 years of consulting available for each one of our clients after the training to say, okay, using the tools that you've learned, what's your three-year goal? What's your milestone each year and then each quarter? How are you going to get there? You know, basic strategy work using the tools. Are you going to change your marketing plan? Are you going to employ more people? Are you going to open up another shop somewhere else? How are you going to control your input costs? Those kind of things. So we'd like to become more of a full-service shop for empowering entrepreneurs in Africa, which is our tag, Empowering Entrepreneurs in Africa. Right now, we're doing a good job, I feel, of empowering entrepreneurs in Africa through training, and I'd like to do a great job in the coming years by offering those two other services, micro-consulting and micro-credit.
And for the amount of money that you would be talking about somebody at this level needing, what kind of money would we be talking about?
Well, micro gets down into the $50 kind of mark and that kind of thing. Most of our clients aren't micro; they're small and medium, so they're formal businesses. It's not a kind of a side business or a chicken coop kind of thing in someone's backyard. It's more of a formal business setting. So anywhere from $200 up to $500, $600, $700. Would be the area of, and there's different types of credit. Working capital is different than investment, is different than renovation and that kind of thing. There's different programs that you'd employ for each kind of financing request.
Yeah. So just I don't know that I've asked this question. You mentioned it just on the businesses that you've worked with. On average, what kind of revenues do they have? What kind of money do they bring in?
You know, by our standards, not much. I'm just trying to do some quick math here. But it's, you know, it's in the order of anywhere from, you know, $1,000 all the way up to $10,000, you know. So it's they're not big businesses, but they do a good job right now of sustaining the people that work for them. And there's some businesses that actually are, as a result of this, we've had one that's gone international. They're now exporting fruit jelly produced in Guinea into Burkina Faso, which is another country in West Africa. Mm-hmm. And so we're excited about that. So it really depends. It really depends on the client.
Well, that maybe also gets another question that I had, and that was for these businesses, the products and the services that they're offering, their clients are all local people. It sounds as if what it is they're doing is they're selling to their neighbors. They're not, with the exception of this this company that's doing export to another African country. They're not exporting. What it is, they're doing things, they're providing things and selling things in the community where they're located.
That's correct. Yeah.
Well, we're coming into about our last 15 minutes in this part of Focus 580, and let me again mention that our guest, Ben Haefele, is here visiting Champaign-Urbana. He's going to speak at the Friday Forum. This is a series of noontime talks that happen at the University YMCA on South Wright Street, down in the heart of the campus, and the theme for the Forum series overall this spring, social entrepreneurship as a force for change, and he's talking about this organization that he helped start. That's called HOAT, Empowering Entrepreneurs in Africa, working in Guinea and West Africa, based in Peoria, where he grew up and lives. They do, by the way, have a website if you're interested in looking at it, which is www.hoatnet, so that's HAUTENET, all as one word, .org. And that way, again, you can get a little bit more of a sense of what it is all about, what they do. There's also some little profiles here on their website of some of the people that have gone through the training. So, you know, if you're interested in getting a little bit more of an idea what it's all about, you can take a look at their website. If you're in and around Champaign-Urbana and you'd like to hear him speak at noon, you can do that too. The forums are always free and open to the public. Questions here, welcome to 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455, and email will-talk@illinois.edu. I think that you mentioned that there are more people who would like to go through this training than you can take. Mm-hmm. How do you decide for those people who are interested? How do you decide which ones that you'd want to take on as clients?
Yeah, well, I guess our training supplier goes out and it's another service that we pay them for. They go out and they look at the people that we want to target. Let me back up. We choose a specific town or geographic area and say, you know, our coverage right now is weaker in this area. We'd like to expand our coverage in this area of the country. So we will say, for example, our last one was in Conakry, which is the capital city. Mm-hmm. And we say, okay, we would like to go out and do some research on the businesses that qualify as small to medium-sized enterprises that have a broad mix of industry. And also we try to make sure there's an equal number of women and men-owned enterprises in that list that is sent to me. Then I'll look at it, and I go through and try to make sure that sometimes we have donor requirements. People want to train businesses of a certain kind. We try to tailor to that to satisfy some of our donor requests. We'll go through and make sure that we have a balance of industry and a balance in gender in terms of who owns the business. And then I go through and make a selection.
Okay, let's talk with another caller, someone in McLean County. This is our line number one.
Hello.
Yes, hello.
Hi. I just would like you to maybe talk about, if you've already talked about, I apologize. What percentage of the monies you collect through grants and donations, how much of that goes into management, how much goes into actual work, and how much do you pay the consulting company? And you can put that in one lump.
Yeah. Well, the amount that we pay our consulting company is actually, those are our program. When I say consulting, the people that provide the training, that's actually our program costs, right? That is what we do.
Okay.
And in 2008, we had a very good ratio. I believe it was 85% of our of the money that was donated went to program costs. In 2009, because we made so little money and still tried to keep some of our programs going, that dipped to about 72%, which is something that is not where we want it to be. But in our business plan, 80 to 83% would be going to program costs. So hopefully we won't have another 2009.
Okay. And that means basically the rest of it is all in management and salaries and that kind of stuff, right?
Well, right now, yes, is the short answer to your question. Right now, I don't make any money doing this. Our board doesn't make any money doing this, which is why it needs to grow substantially in order to kind of become sustainable. When people want to move on, other people have to be willing to step in and say, "Hey, this is something that I could do and make a fair amount of money from, not a lot, but something to compensate them for their time."
Mm-hmm. And also, would you mind repeating the website?
Sure.
I appreciate that.
Sure. It's www.hotenet.org, and that hote is just like Terre Haute, Indiana, HAUTENET.org.
Thank you. I missed a letter. Thank you very, very much, and more power to you.
Right, thank you very much.
Well, just in your Peoria office, how many paid employees do you have?
We have zero paid employees in our Peoria office. We have a outstanding network of volunteers and interns. Bradley University, just wanted to give kudos to Bradley University for providing Hote with a fantastic pool of talent to draw from. The nonprofit sector is very strong in Peoria, so there's a lot of people that have knowledge and are willing to share it, and that's how we've gotten by so far.
And your board of directors, they're all people from the community of Peoria.
They are all people from the community of Peoria. That's correct. But we have an absolutely stellar board of directors as well, which has carried us quite a long way. So.
Right. Effingham, another caller here, line number 4. Hello.
Yes, some time ago I saw a program, similar circumstances in India and women. Do you know anything about that?
I've heard of such programs, but I'm not familiar with the one that you're talking about specifically.
Yes. Well, in any case, the similarities are stark, so far as I'm concerned, and the banks, I think, there in India were part of that. But I always end on a negative note. But it's a study in my opinion, of venture capitalism.
Right.
And that, I think, is what is producing what we are experiencing here. And especially in other parts of the world where they're weaker, just like the Depression of 1929. That was worldwide and huge suffering, and capitalism in and of itself is worn out. I mean, how many times do we have to struggle, and people with fascist ideas think that that's going to work? Thank you.
Well, I assume that you believe in capitalism and that what you're talking about truly is capitalism on the very the most almost elementary level that you can imagine. I mean, if you go above one person dealing with one, other person,
yeah,
that this is really grassroots capitalism. And I would think that it would be something you would say that you personally believe in.
I do believe in entrepreneurship, and that requires me to believe in capitalism, appropriately managed, of course. I think that one thing that's important to recognize here is that Hote is not really imposing a capitalist ideology on anyone. We're helping people do what they already do, only better. And just to go back a couple of years here, as a Peace Corps volunteer, several of the volunteers that I worked with taught English in local high schools. And I remember thinking, before we got there, I thought, boy, here we are as Americans trying to teach people our language. That is very superior and just not right of us. Well, it turns out that the reason that we're teaching, that the Peace Corps is teaching English in West Africa is there's a huge demand for it. People want to know English. They want to know how to, they want to communicate with in the business language of the world. So it's kind of the same thing with Hote. We don't go and ask anyone to become a capitalist. We go and find the capitalists or the entrepreneurs, really, who are already setting up shop and who want to get better and who want to grow their business and employ more people. And those are the people that we serve.
Hmm. You, having had the opportunity maybe to get to know some of these, a little bit about some of these people, mm-hmm. who end up being your clients, people who start out and who do have a business, and it sounds as if it's a business that's having some success and they just want to get better. Do you have some sort of a sense of what it is that it takes to have a successful business, or what kind of person it is that is going to be successful?
Boy, that's tough. Like I said before, I think being an entrepreneur is a character trait, and all these people that I've interacted with, the clients and other entrepreneurs in West Africa, there's just something about them where they know that what they're supposed to be doing is running this woodworking company. They started it. They're very proud of it. When you talk to them about it, they just ooze confidence and kind of this. They look at you with this look that says, "I did it," and mm-hmm. that's something that it's kind of the. They've got something just a little bit different from the rest of us. I wouldn't consider myself an entrepreneur necessarily, maybe in the nonprofit world, but that's a little bit different. So I don't know what it is, but it impresses me greatly.
Hmm. And in the context of their community, what's the definition of success? If you ask them where it is that you would want to be, mm-hmm. how is it that they would define that?
That's a fantastic question, and it's different from the way we would define success here. In the areas that we serve in West Africa, the idea of success is more social. So generally speaking, a business is viewed as an organization that lifts everyone up with it, as opposed to something that one person's on the top and they make all the money and that kind of thing. And I'm not talking about in general. I'm talking about our clients, small to medium-sized enterprises, 2 to 25 employees. So, it's an interesting mix, I would say. Mm. Yeah.
We have just a few minutes left, maybe about 5 minutes left in this part of Focus 580. We'll talk some more with our guest, Ben Haefele. Questions are certainly welcome, 333-9455 here in Champaign-Urbana. We have a toll-free line that is good anywhere that you can hear us. So if it would be a long-distance call, use that. That's 800-222-9455. And we also have email now. We have had for a couple of weeks. Send your questions to will-talk@illinois.edu. I don't know if this is something that you can talk about. I asked a little bit earlier about, you know, what your relationship was with the government of Guinea, and you said, mm-hmm. well, obviously you have to be registered as an NGO in the
right.
country. For the people that you work with, what's their relationship with government, and do they, you know, are there kind of obstacles that government there throws up that they have to learn somehow to deal with?
Yes, and I would say that politically, HODE is non-aligned in West Africa. We do not support or not support any political party, and we're very careful to make sure people know that. But in general, in West Africa, I would say that there is a certain barrier that once a business gets to a certain size and starts making money, it becomes more attractive as a source of tax monies, and it gets paid more attention to. And I think that kind of going back to the first caller's point, we can't really and when I said a small gunboat organization, I meant not a big battleship. We're more maneuverable and flexible. We're not a huge organization that takes 10 years to make a decision. So I apologize if that reference wasn't made clear. But what we do is we can go in and help our clients grow, but then we're creating a critical mass of I don't want to say the middle class, but people that aren't the wealthy, the landed, that kind of thing, but also people that aren't at the bottom of the pyramid. And I think that our view is that those are the people that need to affect change in their own environment. I don't think that HOTE would have any success in going and trying to affect policy change in Guinea or any other country that we plan to do business in the near future, because almost quite frankly, it's not our business, and we'd get laughed out of the country if we tried to go in and say, hey, you guys should stop doing this. And I don't think it's really our job as Haute to try to ask a government how to behave. I think it is the job of the population to try to ask their government how to behave, and we're creating people and businesses and growing that critical mass in the middle of the pyramid, so to speak, mm-hmm. That can affect that change from within.
Have you seen that with people who have been through this and maybe are growing and being more successful, that they somehow feel that they have – that they're in a better position to have some sort of say about how things in their country are run?
No, we haven't, and it's not because they haven't done that. It's just because we don't have data on that necessarily. I've never really had a conversation with any of our clients about that kind of thing.
Hmm. I wonder, you know, had these folks, did they, before being involved with you, had they had much in the way of dealings with people from the United States?
You know, there's a couple Peace Corps volunteers hanging around, you know, in various places. So they'd probably met an American before or knew of an American volunteer in a village or a town nearby. But for a lot of people, and especially since Obama was elected, they're just really tickled pink to be working with Americans. And you know, actually, the email signature of our program manager. Let me back up. My email signature is Ben Hafley Haute, Empowering Entrepreneurs in Africa. His is Ansuman Kamara, Program Manager of an American NGO, Empowering Entrepreneurs in Africa. So we like to state that we are an American NGO because people really like it. And they're encouraged by it.
It's nice to hear that someone actually would feel okay with saying that they were associated with this organization that was an American organization.
Yeah, no. And like I said, we have to turn people away right now due to our current size. So,
well, we are going to have to stop here at this point because we're here at the end of the time, and Ben has to get over to the Y because he's giving a noontime talk. Let me just mention one more time that our guest, Ben Hafley, the founder of Haute, Empowering Entrepreneurs in Africa, will be talking in just a few minutes at the Friday Forum at the University Y, the theme for their series this spring, Social Entrepreneurship as a Force for Change. So this is at the University Y, 1001 South Wright in Champaign, down in the heart of the campus. Anybody who is around should feel welcome to stop by and hear what he has to say. And then if you are interested in finding out more about what Haute is all about, the website is www.haute.net, so Haute. N-E-T, like Terre Haute, .org, and you can find out more. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much for having me.